Accession number 22083, Reel 8.
So, you were picked up. What happened next?
Well, I got back to what they call the ADS, which is an advanced dressing station, and an ambulance came out then and picked me up, and two other chaps. The ambulance was driven by two South Africans, black South Africans, and they picked me up like a bag of bloody potatoes and put me in that was one time when I did hurt.
How long had the attack taken?
Well, we started off probably about 5 o'clock, might have been a bit later, and they were going until after 8 o'clock. I'm not absolutely clear on that, but I know it was broad daylight when the prisoners were coming back, and I guess it would have been the best part of 3 hours that we were fighting.
Did you speak to any of the prisoners?
No.
So what was the condition at the forward aid post? What was that like? The site after the battle?
Oh, it was pretty busy. There was blokes lying everywhere. I'm a bit vague on that because I think I must have been wandering a bit at that time. Yeah, as I say, it took me months to really piece together what exactly did happen. And then they took me back to the first British hospital in Alexandria, and they cleaned me up, and I can distinctly remember when I came to after the or before I went out, they gave me pentothal. That's a needle, having chest wounds, they wouldn't give you chloroform or ether, and I can remember one of the doctors there, he said, "This bloke's never going to go out." And with that, there was sort of a bell rang in my ear, and I never knew any more until I woke up. And when I woke up, I said to the sister there, "How long have I been here?" And she said, "Oh, you come in last night." And I thought I'd been there about 5 days. Because I must have come to and thought it was a day, and then I come to again. But she said, "Oh, you came in last night and they cleaned you up." And I think I stayed at the hospital in Alexandria for about 4 or 5 days.
What was that place like?
Oh, I can't remember much about it. It was a pretty big building. I don't think it was originally intended as a hospital. I'm not sure.
What was the atmosphere in the place? You having been in battle and other men alongside you, I presume.
Well, I can't remember much about that. I've never really tried to think about it. I know when I was ready to be shipped back to Palestine, I got down to the from Alexandria I went to the hospital that was right on the canal. That was just a series of tents, and there were some buildings there, but there was a large amount of tents there, and it was weird. You'd be lying in your bed in the hospital ward and see the boats going along the canal, and you couldn't see any water. And I distinctly remember when the first day I went in, because I was brought in a stretcher, and one of the blokes said, he said, "Who is he? Is he one of ours or one of theirs?" Because I'd had my head shaved, of course I was as black as a nigger. I go black when I get sunburnt, and I hadn't shaved for about 3 or 4 days. And it was a bloke that I went away with. I trained in Northern for 6 months, and he didn't recognise me. So anyway, they put me in bed there, and I wanted to go to the toilet. And I asked the sister if I could get up and go, and she said yes. She said if you can go, she said, get up. And I stood up, and everything spun round, and I thought I was going to collapse. And anyway, eventually walked to the toilet and came back, and from then I was never ever bedridden. But I firmly believe if I hadn't got up then and stayed in bed, I would have been in bed for at least 2 months anyway.
What of the treatment in this particular place?
Oh, very good. Yeah, well, they were run off their feet, naturally. There was a lot of casualties coming back. It was very good. I don't think the food in the English hospitals were as good as ours. It was a bit light on in comparison to our feed, what I can remember of it.
What can you remember of it?
Well, not very much, really.
What was the feeling like to be out of action?
Well, I knew I wouldn't be going back for quite a while. I was out longer than I thought I would have been. But when I got back to Palestine in the 13th AGH, the wound on my shoulder wouldn't heal up. And one night it burst open again, you know, like it was full of pus and that, so they x-rayed me again and found a chip of me shoulder blade in there, and they removed that, and of course from then on I started to come good. But I was in the leg ward, with blokes lying on bed with their legs up in the air, and it was there that I contracted yellow jaundice. One of the nurses had it, and I must have caught it from her. And I should have been put in isolation. They used to isolate everybody with yellow jaundice in those days. And the matron that was in charge, she asked the doctor, Major Nisi, if I could stay there, because I was the only one on my feet. And I used to go around and feed the other blokes, say, you know, like get them drinks or anything like that. He said, "Oh yeah," he said, "that'll be okay." He said, "I stayed in the ward, but I was on a fat-free diet for, must have been at least a month, because I had a pretty solid attack of it, because it took the patients to tell the doctor that I had it. The only way they could tell was because my eyes had gone like sovereigns, gone yellow, because I was that sunburnt and dark, but it didn't show up on my skin like it does on most blokes.
Was there ever a question that you might lose your arm?
No, Not that I know of, at any rate. They put me in one of those airplanes, we used to call them airplane
sling.
There was a metal frame, and you had your arm up like that, and the explanation was that it was easier to pull your arm down if it, like your sinews and muscles tightened up. It was easier to pull it down than it was to lift it up. And I was in that for, excuse me, for quite a while. And then they put a plaster cast up my arm, and I said, "How long have I got to keep this on, Doc?" And he said, "Well, when your mates won't come and talk to you and sit on your bed," he said, "we'll take it off then." And one day, Bluey Bradley, he was one of the fellows that come in the same ambulance as I did, he came and he sat on the bed. He said, "By Jesus, Mitch, you stink." And I told the doctor this. He said, "Righto." And they took it off the next day.
You've still got effects of...
Oh, yeah, those two fingers there are still partly numb. They're not as bad now, but I used to get cramps. That thumb used to lock down there. It was all because of the nerve had been scratched. Yeah, it just scratched the nerve, and if it had been another bit, another eighth of an inch, it would have probably been a wingy.
It's a pretty fair chunk you got out of your arm.
Oh, yeah, it was as though a big dog had... Well, it was about that long, and I reckon it was that deep, when you compare the two arms. But it never broke a bone, or...
About 4 inches across.
Oh, it wouldn't have been 4 inches, I don't think. It would have been 2.5 to 3 inches. Hmm.
What was the news that you were hearing from the front in your position? Did you hear much of the further goings on of the LRMA?
Well, we heard that the 28th had gone off, but that was before ever I got back to Palestine.
What was the feeling on hearing that? Because that was about 5 days after you'd been taken off.
Yeah. It's hard to remember back that far, but I don't think anybody thought over much about it, you know. It's just one of those things that happen in wars, that you have your good days and your bad days. For instance, the 2nd 43rd opened up the Australian part of Alamein. I'm not sure now. I think it was about the 10th of July. Wasn't long after we got down there, and there was a company went out on a fighting patrol, and they played Mary Hill with the Germans. They knocked out quite a few guns and killed a few Germans. I think they lost one man, and that was the only casualty they had. They really stirred them up.
Had you heard of the change in command from around the time you were involved? As I understand, Auchinleck had been replaced.
Yeah, well, we heard about it, but there was just so much water under the bridge, you know, they only back winners in the army, and if a general makes a move and and it comes off, he's a hero, and if he makes a move and it doesn't succeed, he's they replace him.
That was Alexander who was to replace him. Did you know anything about him at all?
No.
What about Montgomery, who was to take over the 8th Army?
No, well, I didn't know anything about him. I dare say that the fellows who were up at the front, they would have come in contact with him. Because he used to go around and I think at one stage he used to wear a slouch hat, one of our hats. So he must have got out and mixed with the troops a bit.
Later on, what were you to hear about the situation as regard the Battle of Alamein in October?
Well, we heard about the big barrage that every gun on, I think it was on a 40-mile front, opened up at 10 o'clock at the, in the evening, and that's when the big battle started. But we only got news of what came over the radio.
So what were some of the things that you were hearing over the radio in regard to the situation further up?
Well, only about the huge success the first battle was. It took a while for them to get the upper hand, but once they got the upper hand, well, and the Jerry's retreated, well, it was all over by the shouting then. And that's all we heard. We never really heard of any setbacks or anything like that. Not that I can remember.
How did you pass the average day?
In hospital? Well, it was pretty well mapped out for you. You have your breakfast and then anybody that could make their own bed had to make it. And then the physiotherapist had come along and exercise your arms and if you were wounded in the legs or that, well, they'd manipulate the legs. And, generally, you never had much time to think about anything else. There was always a picture show on or an entertainment group had come through and they'd put on a concert and all that sort of business. And if anybody wanted anything done, like I been walking around, I could go up to the canteen for them. But there were some fellas there that never got out of bed at all. They were there from week after week.
What was the level of morale like then?
Oh, pretty good. Yeah. I think everybody knew that once that battle was over that they were going to come home because although I believe Mr. Churchill wanted them to remain there, they wanted one division at least to stay behind. But I think everybody was quite happy to be coming home again with the situation as it was in New Guinea and that.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned the VAD, how are they treated and how are they seen by the men in bed?
Oh, very good. They were nurses, you know. They knew what they were doing. They were pretty well trained. We never actually had over much to do with them except when they were working in the wards. One person would do a shift and then the next one would take over and knock off time and they'd carry on until about lights out. And, But there was always somebody in the office in case they were wanted.
What were some of the friendships that you made in the hospital?
Well, I think most of them were fellows out of our own battalion, because if there was any of them came in or and they could move around, they always used to come out and visit, and they'd mainly be your own battalion blokes.
Would you talk amongst yourselves about the experiences that you'd had?
Very rarely. That did happen at different times. You get a few blokes together and they'd start reminiscing. And
Was combat a big part of the discussions, the experiences in combat?
Not to any great extent, I don't think.
What sorts of things would you discuss then?
I can't really remember that one.
I assume that you would have been realising that you weren't going back to fight in the immediate future. What were some of your thoughts of them at that time?
That's a bit hard to recall. I just can't.
Looking forward to going home?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I often, when I wrote home, I often said, well, I think we should be home looking after our own dunghill instead of being over here.
How often would you receive mail in the hospital?
Or at least once a week. Yeah, around about once a week, I reckon. Because I had four sisters that I used to write to, and my mother, and I had a brother that was up in Darwin, and another one in the tank division, like the 10th Armoured Regiment that they had here that never ever went away. And then I got a Christmas parcel in Syria with a girl's name in it, and I wrote back and thanked her for it, and from then on we corresponded right up to New Guinea. You know, I don't know what happened there. I don't know whether one of our letters went astray, but
tell us about the process of coming home, what that involved.
Well, we went down to Tewfik again by train, and this time they had a bridge over the canal, and we went straight over. And I came home on the Harangi, which is a Dutch hospital ship. I think she was built and finished just around about the outbreak of war, and she was put into commission as a hospital ship. And I went aboard, and I was in a cabin with one other Aussie and two Kiwis. One was a Maori and one was a white New Zealander, and we got on really well. We were in a little cabin. It was just like being on a cruise. And they went a long way south to get out of the road of any would-be raiders, and we were supposed to have pulled into Melbourne. As a matter of fact, they'd made all the arrangements to pay us the day before, and then all of a sudden we shot off and we went to New Zealand. And the reason they gave us was that the ninth divvy was on its way home, and they didn't want any loose gossip about, just in case there was any raiders about, you know, like if we'd have, say, for instance, we'd have got in about a fortnight before the division, and people started talking about it, that the division was on its way home. Well, the word could have got back to the enemy forces, and that's the reason they gave us, that we were shot to New Zealand. And we pulled into Wellington, and we had 14 days there, and the wound on my back healed up the day that we hit New Zealand. But we were getting around New Zealand in the hospital blues, and because, like all army stuff, it never fitted. But it was a real tonic, that 14 days there.
What was it like approaching Australia to know that you'd sort of made it back?
Oh, well, we just took it in our stride, I suppose. I don't think there was any doubts that we would ever wouldn't get there. We used to have lights on. It was well lit up because it had the big red crosses all over it. That didn't matter much with the nips, any rate. But I think the Germans would have respected it.
Tell us about going to Wellington. What was it like? What sorts of things did you...
Well, I think that was the first bit of emotion I ever felt, was when I saw the New Zealanders going aboard, going ashore, and being met by their kinfolk, and the reception they got. I knew when I got home there'd be nobody there, because all my folk lived on the goldfields. They gave us a really good time, the civilians in Wellington. They took us to the races and took us on tours around, up around Palmerston North. And it's a beautiful country, New Zealand. And I don't know why there's so many of them move over here to live.
So you're mentioning that it was a real tonic.
Yeah. Well, as I say, we were just about given the freedom of the city. We used to, the only thing that I didn't like about it was their beer. It was crook. I remember one brand, What a Matter, and we used to call it What's the Matter. It wasn't very good beer at all.
What was the sense of the war being on outside?
Of course, when we were there, we arrived around about the same time as the Yanks that had been at Guadalcanal. Of course, we got friendly with quite a few of them. We got on all right with them. It's only when they were here that the troops started to mix it up a bit, because they used to play up a bit. The old Yanks, they had the dough, and that counted for everything, I suppose. According to all accounts, when the 16th came back, some of them were walking down Hay Street, and one of the Yanks said, "And when are you guys going to start fighting?" And the digger said, "Right now." He slipped into him and gave him a belting.